It's Saturday, March 14th, and welcome to Higher IQ. On Thursday, the U.S. Senate passed a housing bill by a vote of 89 to 10. In a Congress that can barely agree on what day it is, that's remarkable. The bill is called the 21st Century Road to Housing Act. It was co-authored by Elizabeth Warren and Tim Scott, and it's the largest housing legislation in decades. The headline provision bans large institutional investors from buying single-family homes, but the real story is more complicated than that, and more interesting. Today we're going to explain why America has a housing crisis, what this bill actually does, and why its most popular feature might be the least important one. Start with the math. The United States is short somewhere between 3.7 and 4.7 million homes, depending on whose estimate you use. Freddie Mac puts it at 3.7 million. Zillow says 4.7 million. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce uses the same number. The range matters less than the direction. By every serious estimate, the deficit is growing, not shrinking. Builders completed about 1.6 million units in 2024, which is actually a record since 2007, but it still wasn't enough to keep up with household formation. For every 100 new suburban households that formed in the most recent reporting period, only 67 new homes were delivered. The shortage has a clear origin point. After the 2008 financial crisis, home building collapsed and never fully recovered. In the decade before the crash, builders were completing about 1.5 million homes a year. After the crash, construction fell off a cliff. Builders went bankrupt. An estimated 1.5 million construction workers left the industry between 2006 and 2011, and many never came back. The skilled labor shortage in construction persists to this day. 81% of construction firms surveyed by the Associated General Contractors of America cited labor shortages as a major constraint. And critically, the regulatory environment got harder in the aftermath. Local governments tightened zoning restrictions. NIMBY opposition to new development intensified. Permitting timelines stretched. Material costs rose. The result is what economists call a structural deficit. We weren't building enough homes for over a decade. Demand kept growing as 72 million millennials entered their prime home buying years, and the gap compounded year after year. That gap is the root cause of almost everything people complain about in housing. High prices, bidding wars, adults in their late 20s and early 30s living with their parents. 18% of adults aged 25 to 34 now live in a parent's home, up from 8% in the 1970s, according to Pew. The median monthly mortgage payment in 2024 was over $2,000. Existing home sales fell to a 30-year low last year. This isn't a market that's temporarily overheated. It's a market with a permanent supply problem. Enter the bill. The 21st Century Road to Housing Act does a lot of things. It creates grants for state and local governments to update zoning codes and streamline permitting. It expands the definition of eligible housing to include manufactured homes, which are cheaper and faster to build than traditional construction. It revises FHA loan limits for multifamily mortgages. It codifies protections for tenants in public housing. And it bans institutional investors, defined as those owning 350 or more single-family homes, from buying additional ones. That last provision is the one getting all the attention, and it's the one that probably matters least. The populist version of the housing crisis goes something like this. Wall Street hedge funds are buying up all the houses, turning them into rentals, and pricing regular families out. It's a satisfying narrative. It's also largely inaccurate, at least at the scale people imagine. Institutional investors, meaning companies that own 100 or more single-family homes, own about 3-4% of the single-family rental stock nationwide, according to the Urban Institute. As a share of all single-family homes, not just rentals, it's less than 1%. Blackstone, one of the most commonly cited villains, holds about 0.6%. The GAO found that by 2022, the 32 largest institutional investors collectively owned about 450,000 homes. That sounds like a lot until you remember there are roughly 140 million housing units in the country. Now, there are real caveats here. the national average masks significant regional concentration. In Atlanta, institutional investors own about 25% of the single-family rental market. In Jacksonville, it's 21%. Charlotte, 18%. These are real numbers in real markets. And if you're trying to buy a starter home in one of those cities, the competition from institutional buyers is a genuine problem. Studies reviewed by the GAO found that institutional investment may have contributed to higher rents and home prices in those concentrated markets. So the concern isn't invented. But banning institutional buyers nationally, as the bill proposes, is addressing a local problem with a national solution, and it's doing nothing about the much larger cause of the crisis. We simply don't have enough houses. The provisions in the bill that could actually matter are the boring ones: zoning reform incentives, manufactured housing expansion, and streamlined permitting don't make headlines the way banning Wall Street from buying your house does. But the evidence from cities and states that have loosened building restrictions is encouraging. Zillow's research found that areas with fewer building regulations saw housing supply respond faster to demand and prices moderate more quickly. The bill creates grant programs to encourage exactly that kind of reform, though the funding levels and enforcement mechanisms will determine whether they actually work. One provision buried in the bill is worth understanding. The bill allows institutional investors to continue building new homes, but requires them to sell those properties to individual buyers after 7 years, with price concessions and a 30-day first look window for existing tenants. That's a genuine middle ground. It keeps institutional capital in the housing construction pipeline, where it can help close the supply gap while preventing permanent conversion of owner-occupied neighborhoods into corporate rental portfolios. Whether the 7-year timeline is right or whether investors will simply stop building if the economics don't work is an open question. The bill passed the Senate 89-10, which in the current political environment is almost unheard of. But it faces real obstacles. The House passed its own version earlier, and several House Republicans have already objected to changes the Senate made, particularly the institutional investor ban and the removal of some provisions that would have reduced building regulations further. Trump has also said he won't sign any bills until the Senate passes voter ID legislation, which could stall everything regardless of the housing bill's merits. And even if it becomes law, experts at the American Enterprise Institute and elsewhere have cautioned that the institutional investor ban would have limited practical impact, since most large players have already been reducing their single-family exposure. The deeper question the bill raises is one of political incentives. Banning Wall Street investors is popular. Building more housing in your neighborhood is not. Zoning reform means denser construction, which means existing homeowners watching their quiet street get a new apartment building next door. That's the trade-off at the heart of the housing crisis, and it's one that no bill, however bipartisan, has figured out how to solve. The shortage is a supply problem. Supply requires building. Building requires permission, and permission is the hardest thing to get in American housing. California, the state with the most severe shortage, has been trying to pass zoning reform for years, and every attempt runs into the same wall. Existing homeowners who benefit from scarcity don't want more homes built near them. Their home values depend on it. The housing crisis is at its core a conflict between the people who already own homes and the people who want to. And right now, the people who already own homes vote more, show up to city council meetings more, and fight harder. That's the math. No bill can change with 89 votes. So if someone tells you Wall Street is the reason they can't buy a house, here's the fuller picture. America is short nearly 4 million homes because we stopped building them after 2008 and never caught up. Institutional investors own less than 1% of the housing stock nationally, though they're a real problem in a handful of cities like Atlanta and Charlotte. The Senate just passed the biggest housing bill in decades, 89-10, and its headline feature is banning those investors. But the provisions that could actually matter are the boring ones: zoning reform, faster permitting, manufactured housing. The crisis isn't a Wall Street story. It's a construction story. And the reason we're not building is that the people who already own homes have every incentive to make sure we don't. Stay informed, stay curious, and we'll see you tomorrow.